often present at the moment people die, the police have some of the best stories. I served on the police force of a mid-sized city in Virginia for 27 years, retiring in 2002 as a detective sergeant. In the mid-80s, my partner and I were working a burglary detail, patrolling in uniform, but in an unmarked vehicle. It was just before twilight when we spotted a suspicious-looking guy driving slowly through a neighborhood. There was just one person in the car, and we began tailing him, thinking he was casing houses. But he saw us and took off at high speed. We called for backup, then took off after him. It eventually became apparent that he was heading toward a 100-foot-long railroad tunnel. Both cars were doing about 75 miles per hour. Then, as quickly as it began, the pursuit came to an abrupt end. Hold on. In his panic to escape, he crashed into the concrete archway. We were about 200 feet behind when it happened. We pulled up behind the crash, then watched in shock as the driver, a white male, squeezed himself out of the driver's window, seemingly unscathed, and ran off into the tunnel. We didn't waste a second. We both got out and took off after him. He was running hard, but so were we, and we never lost sight of him. We got within a few feet of him.
Police, stop!
And
what the hell?
He vanished. There were no side exits in this tunnel. And it's not that dark in there. There was simply nowhere he could have gone, and nowhere he could have been hiding. We were confused, to say the least, and reluctantly headed back to the tunnel's entrance, wondering how we were going to explain this. But as we reached the crash site, we saw something neither of us were expecting. It was the guy we had just been chasing. The same clothes, the same weight, the same man.
How the hell did he get back here?
Only now, he was sitting in the driver's seat of his totaled car. The steering wheel had crushed his chest, killing him. We were shocked, but we remained professional and called for a supervisor and a traffic unit to come to the scene. When they arrived, we told the supervisor what had occurred.
This is going to sound a little strange, but this is what happened.
He was an older, experienced officer, wise in the ways of the department. He told us to write our reports just the way we told him, but to leave out all references of pursuing a dead man on foot. Don't say anything about the spirit or whatever it was. My partner and I are both retired now and still friends. We talk about that day occasionally, but neither of us have any explanation other than we saw and chased the spirit of a deceased driver fleeing from the police. Story number two is unexplainable. I worked in security at a big train station. My job was pretty straightforward. I would watch the live camera footage and report anything suspicious or dangerous. I was assigned a night shift during my first week, and as I was unaccustomed to those hours, I accidentally dozed off. And when I woke, my eyes were instantly locked onto someone else's. A woman's face was right up close to one of the security cameras and peering into it in such a way it felt as if she was watching me. Of course, I know people can't see through the camera. But as I leaned across the desk to grab my walkie-talkie, her eyes followed me. I froze and looked back at her, telling myself it was just a coincidence and that she wasn't really observing me. I radioed the security guards working on the floor, informing them of the strange image on camera 17. At first, they didn't respond. Then...
Camera 17 is 12 feet up. No one can stick their face into it, but if you're positive you saw something, I'll check it out.
He must be mistaken, I thought, about the camera being 12 feet up. I returned my attention to the monitors and the woman whose gaze continued to follow my every movement. Then her face began to shrink, fading away until she was standing on the platform and staring up at the camera around 12 feet above her. Then, as I watched, the security guard I was just talking to walked into frame and started speaking with her. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but when he finished talking, she turned and walked away. Later on, he came into the security office and told me about the encounter. He said, the woman had bulging, psychotic eyes and didn't respond at all to what he was saying.
Something about her freaked me out. She was just wrong.
Later that week, I was assigned the night shift again, and as I entered the security room, a co-worker who was ending his shift handed me an envelope.
It's from one of the security guards.
I opened it and read the note.
If you see that weird woman staring into the camera again, just ignore her.
The evening was uneventful, and sometime after midnight, When the station was quiet, I took the opportunity to use the restroom. And when I returned, I saw the mysterious woman's face large on a screen. And again, she appeared to be looking around the room. I knew it wasn't possible, but the way her eyes followed my movements made me doubt myself. She had a wild, psychotic look about her, and as I watched the monitor, a subtle smile curled her lips. She knew I was looking at her. I wanted to go down to the platform and ask her what the hell she was doing, but I remembered the security guard's note, so instead, I taped a sheet of paper over the screen. But a couple of seconds later, her face appeared on a different monitor, a camera that was at least 2 minutes' walk from the first, and also at least 12 feet up. There was no way she could have got there so fast, and no way of climbing up to the camera. But there she was, peering into the office. I taped a sheet of paper over the new screen, then stepped away from the desk as I waited for her to reappear on one of the other monitors. I was hoping to see her walk into frame, but she didn't. And then, her face just popped onto another screen. This one, just 20 feet or so, on the other side of my door. I knew the door couldn't be opened without the code, but I also knew people can't levitate 12 feet in the air. I taped over every screen. Then I waited. It may have been a passenger with a legitimate concern, but I didn't take the risk. In fact, as soon as my shift ended, I phoned head office and quit. Maybe if just one other person had seen the woman on the screens, it wouldn't be so bad. But no, it was just me, and it felt personal. You may consider me weak, to fold so easily, but if you'd been there and felt that woman's gaze, you'd understand. I never got to speak to the security guard again. I wanted to ask him what scared him enough to leave me that warning. But I guess it wasn't nothing. I don't know what she was, but I know she was watching me. And that alone is unexplainable.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Part two now of last week's story, The Entity. It was 3 or 4 months later, and my husband and grown sons went with me to my aunt's house for the weekend. The boys wanted to sleep in the living room with the TV, but I advised against it. However, they laughed it off and made beds on the living room floor, teasing me for being so scared. Then, at 3 a.m.
What the hell?
Something hit the floor.
It's the middle of the night.
Twice. We both thought it
was
each other.
What the hell are you talking about?
But neither of us was even moving.
Another month passed, and this time it was just me and my husband visiting. The bed had a very uncomfortable mattress. And late into the night, while I was asleep, my husband decided to move to the living room couch. At 3 o'clock, he came running back to the bedroom, shaking me awake.
Were you just in the living room?
Obviously, I wasn't.
What happened?
He said a woman in a red dress tapped him on the shoulder, then said something he couldn't understand. Then she threw her head back and laughed. Then took off to the bedroom where I was. On another visit, about a month later, my husband went to bed early while I stayed up with my aunt watching TV in her room. From the other bedroom, we started hearing my husband's muffled yells.
Did you hear that?
I raced in there and found him wide awake and terrified.
What is it?
When he could finally talk, he said he was being pinned to the bed by his throat and chest. by something he couldn't see. After that, we kept the light on in that bedroom. Not long after that, my aunt passed away, suddenly and unexpectedly. And being the closest relative, I had to organize the funeral, her estate sale, and the closing of her house. But based on everything that happened, I was no longer willing to spend the night there. So we made a reservation at a nearby hotel. The day before the estate sale, we worked late into the night. Then we left for the hotel in separate cars at around 1 a.m.
See you at the hotel.
Halfway there, I realized I'd forgotten my makeup bag.
Damn it.
And reluctantly turned the car around. I took a deep breath. Then got out of the car. Leaving the engine running. I headed for the bathroom, turning on each light that I passed. I grabbed the bag and headed back. I was about halfway to the front door when something shoved me from behind. I'd fallen onto the hardwood floor, the contents of my makeup bag flying in all directions. I scooped up whatever I could reach, got up, and ran to the door, leaving all the lights on. I didn't even bother locking the door. And as I left, I yelled out,
"You are not allowed to follow me."
Several months later, the home was sold to a very nice family. He was a builder who specialized in restoring old houses, which is what he did to my aunt's house. When it was finished, he invited me to see the finished house, and with trepidation, I accepted.
"Great, I'll see you soon."
I didn't say why, but I refused to go there at night. So, one bright morning, I went to see the house. It was beautiful, the sort of thing you see on home reno shows. Nothing happened while I was there, but I never let my guard down. Then, just as I was leaving, the builder's wife said,
"The neighbors say they have a ghost in their house. I wish we had one too. It's the only thing this house is missing."
I didn't know what to say. I didn't have the courage to tell them. I just forced a smile, wished them the best, then left. I truly hope she doesn't get her wish. She has no idea what she's asking for. We have one more. It's titled, Dude, It's a Plane. And I'll see you next week. We were college students at the University of Iowa. A couple of buddies and I would often hang out in a field a few miles off campus. We'd talk, drink beer, and look at the stars. This particular night, we'd been there for about an hour when my friend Charlie pointed to the tree line and asked,
"What is that?"
A bright light was hovering just above the treetops.
"Dude, it's a plane."
The light grew brighter and bigger.
"It's coming straight toward us."
We continued watching, intrigued, but not sure if we should be concerned. Then, in the blink of an eye, the light became piercingly bright, more blinding than the sun, and everything around us turned white. And the next thing I remember was waking up in my bed. At first, I thought I was waking from a dream, but I was fully dressed. And then I saw the blanket on my bed was covered in twigs and grass. It was the blanket I used when we went to the field. I never put it on my bed, and I always shook off the grass before we came home. Utterly confused and unable to recall how I got into bed or how the night ended, I walked down the hallway of our dorm to Charlie's room, hoping he could clarify.
"Hey."
He resembled the Walking Dead. Tangled hair, dark eyes, and his face as pale as a ghost.
"Are you okay?"
He looked up and down the hallway. Then he said,
"Come in, quickly."
Before I could ask him anything, he asked me if I remembered anything.
"Nothing after we saw that light."
"Let me see your hands."
"What?"
He grabbed my wrists and examined my palms. He pointed to very thin cuts on both my pointer fingers. Then he showed me the same narrow slits on his fingers.
"We were abducted."
"Are you serious?"
"You're not the first one to come over this morning. Ollie did too, but I'm the only one who remembers what happened last night."
"So, you remember everything?"
"Yeah, everything."
He lit a cigarette, then proceeded to tell me what we all experienced.
"After that light blinded us all, we were suddenly in a room somewhere, probably their ship. We were all strapped onto metal tables. You guys were unconscious, but I was awake. I looked around and could see these three huge tubes full of water. Inside each tube was a person. One of the people would drown, then the next person would wake up. It was a continuing cycle of people drowning and coming back to life. I can't get it out of my head."
Seeing Charlie like this was disturbing. I thanked him for explaining it. Then I told him I was going back to my dorm to process it. But instead, I went to Ollie's room. We both agreed Charlie was off his rocker, and rather than supporting him, we slowly removed him from our lives. This happened before the internet, but years later, I started researching abduction stories and found similarities between those stories and Charlie's account of that evening. And I now believe Charlie's story to be true. I've often wondered if the beings that abducted us did something to us, something that made us skeptical of Charlie's story. I mean, there was quite a bit of evidence, but we just dismissed it.